Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please make sure the volume of this podcast is set perfectly to your listening enjoyment. Please take your seat, whether that's on the treadmill, car, sofa, or bed, and buckle in for the last trip. My name is Jamie Beebe, and I'll be your tour guide, recreating someone's last days in paradise. On behalf of myself and everyone behind the scenes, please enjoy the Last Trip podcast. And because nobody likes a long flight to get to where they want to be, let's prepare for takeoff. On August 4th, 2019, 15-year-old Nora Ann Curran vanished from a remote eco-resort in Malaysia. She was on vacation with her family at the Dusun, a rainforest retreat meant for rest and quiet. But that morning, her family woke to find her gone. The window of her room was open. Nora, who had developmental disabilities and relied heavily on her parents, had disappeared into dense jungle terrain. Authorities would later say there were no signs of forced entry and no evidence of abduction. For 10 days, hundreds of searchers combed the rainforest. They called her name through thick heat and relentless brush. Helicopters circled overhead. Volunteers trekked through ravines and riverbeds. Then, more than a mile from the resort, Nora's body was found near a stream. An autopsy concluded she likely died from prolonged stress and starvation. Officials ruled her death a misadventure. But her family has long questioned how a vulnerable teenager could have traveled that far alone, and why certain details have never quite added up. Let's step into the jungle of unanswered questions surrounding the disappearance of Nora Ann Curran. When people picture Malaysia, they often imagine glittering Kuala Lumpur skyscrapers or turquoise island water. But just a couple of hours outside the city, beyond the expressways and concrete, you climb into a different world entirely. The Dusun Eco Resort sits about 800 feet above sea level in the foothills of the Titiwangsa mountain range in southern Negeri Sembilan. The Titiwangsa range is the pine of peninsular Malaysia, a rugged rainforest-covered chain that has shaped the country's climate, culture, and settlement patterns for centuries. These mountains separate east from west, coast from coast, and in some ways, past from present. The Dusun itself is intimate. 7 self-contained houses scattered across a hillside durian orchard, with space for about 20 guests at a time. It's not a bustling hotel. It's not rows of rooms and a lobby bar. Each house stands alone, surrounded by rainforest, with no television glow bleeding into the night. The design is intentional. Eco-conscious, open to air, open to sound. You're meant to hear the forest. And you will. The property borders the 4,000-acre Baramban Forest Reserve, an expanse of thick lowland rainforest that feels primordial. Malaysia's rainforests are some of the oldest in the world, far older than the Amazon. And that age carries weight. You feel it in the humidity, in the smell of damp earth and leaf litter, in how the trees tower above you in layers, each one competing for a sliver of light. The Baramban Forest Reserve is home to sun bears, the smallest bear species in the world, along with white-handed gibbons whose echoing calls drift like haunting music at dawn. There are long-tailed macs watching from branches, wild boar rooting in the undergrowth, tapirs with their startling black and white coats, muntjac deer, even panthers have been known to pass through. Locals have reported leopard tracks in the mud. It's beautiful, but it's also untamed. Many visitors come specifically for that feeling. They hike Gunung Telepak Buruk, the highest mountain in the area, a steady climb through dense forest canopy that rewards you with misty views, stretching across the Nigeria Sembilan. Others seek out a World War II crash site hidden in the jungle, a wrecked aircraft claimed by vines and moss. It's the kind of destination that feels like a secret, something you earn, but earning it can come at a cost. Locals will tell you, quietly, almost casually, that hikers sometimes get lost. The jungle shifts when the sun drops. Trails blur into animal tracks. What felt manageable at 2 p.m. becomes disorienting at 6:30 p.m. Tropical darkness doesn't ease in gradually. It falls. Many underestimate how long it takes to reach the crash site. Some forget flashlights. Some assume they'll make it back before nightfall. The jungle doesn't negotiate, and that's part of the draw. Tourists come here to disconnect, to swim in hillside infinity pools overlooking green valleys, to wake up to mist rolling over the mountains, to eat fresh durian when it's in season, to sit with a book and listen to cicadas pulse in rhythmic waves. For families especially, it feels secluded, safe, curated, but still authentic. Nigeria Sembilan itself carries deep cultural roots. The state is influenced by Minangkabau heritage from Sumatra. Visible in its traditional architecture, rooftops shaped like buffalo horns reaching skyward. The culture is matrilineal, one of the few remaining in the world. It's a place where old customs coexist with modern Malaysia. Respect for nature is woven into the history. The forest isn't just scenery. It's livelihood, folklore, and living memory. But this landscape asks something from you. If you're considering visiting, you need to understand both sides of it, the serenity and the scale, the curated quiet of an eco-resort and the vast, indifferent wilderness just beyond its edges. This is not a manicured park with tidy railings and clear signage at every turn. It's an old-growth rainforest connected to mountains that stretch far beyond what you can see from a balcony. Personally, I understand the appeal. There's something intoxicating about sleeping on the edge of a forest that hums with life, about choosing a place small enough to feel private, intentional. And the Dasun is designed for that intimacy. No crowds, no noise pollution, no neon distractions. But you cannot forget where you are. You're in the foothills of a mountain range that cuts through an ancient forest. You are next to a reserve large enough to swallow sound. You are sharing space with wildlife that does not announce itself before moving. It is breathtaking, it is beautiful, it is wild. And like all wilderness, it deserves both awe and respect. The rainforest is vast, ancient, indifferent. But in the middle of all that scale, those mountains, that canopy, those miles of green, was one very specific, very loved 15-year-old girl. Before the headlines, before the search helicopters, before the word misadventure was ever entered into the conversation, there was Nora. So, who was she?
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Before the headlines reduced her to the missing girl, before her name was spoken in press conferences and courtroom rulings, Nora Ann Curran was simply a daughter, a sister, the oldest of three children. Nora's mother, Meeb, is Irish. Her father, Sebastian, is French. They were a family living in Belfast, two cultures woven together inside one home. Sebastian worked in data analysis sales and Meeb in market research. By all accounts, they built a thoughtful, structured life around their children, especially around Nora, because Nora needed more. She was 15 years old in the summer of 2019, but developmentally, she functioned more like a 5 or 6 year old child. Nora was born with holoprosencephaly, a rare congenital brain malformation that occurs when the developing brain does not properly divide into right and left hemispheres during early pregnancy. Now, the severity can vary widely. In its most serious form, infants do not survive. In milder forms, like what Nora lived with, the brain is partially divided. But neurological development is significantly impacted. Children with holoprosencephaly can experience intellectual disability, developmental delays, motor impairment, seizures, hormonal irregularities, and difficulty with balance and coordination. Some struggle with speech. Some have facial abnormalities. Some require lifelong supervision. Nora's version of the condition meant she had limited verbal communication. She could only write a few words. She had the mental capacity of a much younger child. She could wash and dress herself, but struggled with buttons and washing her hair. She could not independently make or receive phone calls. She relied heavily on routine and on her mother. Holoprosencephaly also often affects muscle tone and coordination. Nora had weak core strength. Her gait was fragile. She struggled with balance and uneven ground posed real risk. And she would tire easily. At just over 65 pounds, significantly underweight for a 15-year-old, her small frame made her appear much younger than she was. Physically and cognitively, she was vulnerable. Emotionally, she was described as gentle, sensitive, innocent. Outside her family, Nora could be extremely shy. New environments made her anxious. She relied on familiarity. She never went anywhere alone. Not to the shops, not on walks. Her family has consistently said she would not have voluntarily left them. She did not have the awareness or skill to seek help from strangers if she were lost. And she did not fully grasp danger in the way most teenagers do. She attended a school for young people with learning and communication difficulties. A structured environment designed to meet her at her level. And that level wasn't 15. It was elementary in many ways. But that didn't mean that her life was small. She had traveled widely with her family. Asia, Europe. She loved going on holiday. And she was excited about Malaysia. The idea of a new place, new sights, experienced through the safe container of her parents and siblings, well, that brought her joy. Her mother would later describe her as the truest, most precious girl, loved infinitely. When you listen to those words, you hear something deeper than grief. You hear the weight of protectiveness, the years of vigilance. Parenting a child like Nora means constant calculation. Stairs, curbs, crowds, door locks, routines. You don't relax in the way other parents might. You assess. You monitor. Because a child like Nora is both 15 and 6 at the same time. She was the oldest sibling, but not the independent one. She was loving, affectionate, funny in ways that were uniquely hers. She brought lightness into her family. She was described as extremely loving, demonstrative with her affection. But she was also profoundly dependent. Holoprosencephaly isn't just a diagnosis. It shapes daily life. It means vulnerability in environments that demand navigation. It means difficulty with spatial awareness and executive functioning. It means challenges with hunger signals, stress response, and regulation. And that context matters. Because when people imagine a 15-year-old girl in a rainforest, they might imagine a teenager capable of assessing danger, distance, thirst, or direction. Nora was not that teenager. She was a child in many ways, a gentle, shy, physically fragile child in a teenage body. And in her short life, according to those who loved her most, she was deeply, fiercely cherished. That is who she was before the jungle.
Moro Casino. America. Mocha Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
The Korins arrived in Malaysia in the soft gray light of morning on August 3rd, 2019, after an overnight flight from London. They checked in around 7 a.m. at the Dusun Eco Resort in Negeri Sembilan, about an hour's drive from Kuala Lumpur. It was meant to be a two-week family holiday, a chance to rest, to let the children swim, to breathe mountain air after the long flight. The resort staff welcomed them to the Sora House, a two-story wooden chalet perched on a steep hillside overlooking the rainforest. Upstairs, on a mezzanine level reached by a spiral staircase, Nora shared a double mattress with her younger sister, Ines. Downstairs, just meters away, her parents slept in the bedroom below. It felt contained, close, safe. That first day passed quietly. The family settled in, swam, rested. That night, they went to bed early. Later, Meeb would say she drifted into a deep sleep. Jet lag hung heavy. And sometime during the night, she heard something that unsettled her. Faint, muffled voices, whispering, and it sounded close, inside the chalet. Movement, the shifting of something. Two people, maybe, and then silence. Morning came. At around 8:30 a.m. on August 4th, Sebastian went upstairs and realized Nora was not in bed. Ines had noticed earlier but assumed her sister had gone downstairs to their parents' room. She hadn't. Nora was gone. The downstairs window was wide open. Meeb insists she had shut it the night before. There were no signs of forced entry. Nora's shoes were still inside. Her parents were adamant about what that meant. Nora struggled with coordination and balance. She was underweight, fragile. They believed she was physically incapable of climbing out of that window unaided. The only way she might have left on her own, they said, would have been through the front door, possibly confusing it for the bathroom in the dark. But they didn't believe she would have done that either. Nora was shy, highly dependent, never went anywhere alone. She wouldn't have understood how to get help. Her mother said that if Nora encountered a problem, she wouldn't scream. She would freeze. She was submissive. If pushed, she wouldn't push back. She wouldn't fight. And she was barefoot, wearing only her underwear when she went to sleep. Authorities were notified immediately. Police classified it as a missing persons case that same day. They said there was no evidence of abduction. But Nora's parents disagreed. By August 6th, they publicly insisted that she had been abducted. On August 7th, police said they were not ruling out any possibilities, including a criminal element. The search began almost immediately and quickly grew into a small-scale operation. Police, canine tracker dogs, fire and rescue, civil defense, People's Volunteer Corps, local volunteers, drones, helicopters equipped with heat-seeking cameras. Indigenous trackers known for their jungle expertise. They searched in brutal humidity. They searched through steep ravines and thick undergrowth. They followed streams, believing, as is common in wilderness survival, that a lost person might gravitate toward water. The Dusun had no CCTV cameras except in the reception area. There were no security barriers restricting access in or out of the property. On August 8th, 4 days after Nora vanished, authorities played a recording of her mother's voice through loudspeakers in the jungle. "Nora, Nora darling, mummy's here." The sound echoed through dense trees. Cadaver dogs were deployed. On August 11th, police set up a dedicated hotline. On August 12th, a $10,000 reward donated by an anonymous Belfast businessman was offered for information leading to her safe return. Each morning began with hope. Each evening ended without her. And then, on August 13th, at 1:57 p.m., 10 days after she disappeared, volunteers from the Seremban Hiking Club found her. She was located in a small stream within a ravine near the Gunung Baramban in the Pantai Hills, about 1.6 miles, roughly 2.5 kilometers, from the resort. The area was described as difficult terrain inside a palm oil estate bordering forest. She was unclothed. Sean Yip, one of the hikers who found her, later said she wasn't concealed by foliage. She wasn't hidden. She was lying in the stream with her head resting on her hands. It looked like she was sleeping, he said. Her head was resting on her hands, but we all knew she was dead. He noted scratches on her arms and light bruising, but no obvious severe injuries. He believed she may have been elsewhere earlier and possibly walked to the stream seeking water. He observed there were no visible footprints, suggesting she may have been walking in shallow water. That evening, her family confirmed the body was Nora's. Her parents' lawyer urged caution in interpreting early autopsy findings. He questioned whether she could realistically have walked that distance, barefoot, unclothed, over rocky terrain in darkness. Authorities continued searching even after her body was recovered, this time for missing clothing, particularly her underwear. On August 14th, 361 personnel formed a sweeping line from the resort to the site where she was found. Nothing was located. Volunteers expressed surprise at where she was discovered. Some believed prior searches had covered the same area and questioned how she might not have been seen earlier. 10 days, from whispers in the night to body in a stream. In the span of a week and a half, a family holiday became an international search operation. A missing persons case became a recovered body. And the lush green forest that draws travelers seeking peace became the backdrop for one of the most haunting disappearances in recent memory.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
When Nora's body was found on August 13th, the search didn't end. It shifted. From helicopters and loudspeakers to fluorescent-lit autopsy rooms. From volunteers combing ravines to forensic reports and sworn testimony. A post-mortem examination was conducted shortly after her body was recovered. The official cause of death, according to authorities, was upper gastrointestinal bleeding due to a perforated duodenal ulcer. In simple terms, a severe ulcer in the small intestine had ruptured, leading to internal bleeding. The ulcer, they said, was consistent with prolonged stress and lack of food. Police stated she had likely died from starvation and stress while alone in the jungle. The report also estimated that Nora had been dead for approximately 4 days before she was found. If she disappeared on August 4th and was located on August 13th, it meant she may have survived in the rainforest for several days before succumbing. There were scratches and minor wounds on her legs and some bruising. But no catastrophic injuries. No broken bones. The Nigeri Sembilan police chief publicly stated there were no signs of rape. No evidence of foul play. No indication of kidnapping or abduction. No ransom demands. He said the investigation found no criminal element, and that officers believed Nora had climbed out of the window on her own and gotten lost. But the questions did not dissolve with the official explanation. One of the most puzzling aspects was the state of undress. Nora had gone to sleep wearing her underwear. When she was found, she was unclothed. What had happened to her clothing? Authorities conducted an extensive search operation specifically to locate her missing underwear. Nothing was ever recovered. Post-mortem toxicology testing did not reveal traces of common drugs, poisons, over-the-counter medications, recreational substances, or synthetic drugs. government chemists testified at the inquest that swabs taken during the postmortem, both externally and internally, revealed no foreign DNA in four separate reports. In Malaysia's hot, humid climate, DNA on the surface of a body degrades quickly. Environmental conditions accelerate breakdown. But the internal swabs also showed no foreign genetic material. To investigators, that reinforced the absence of a third party. To Nora's parents, it did not answer the deeper question of how their vulnerable daughter ended up in the forest. Then there was the canine search. A handler who participated on August 6th, 11th, and 12th described his German Shepherd's role in tracking. On the first day of his assignment, he was brought to the house where Nora had stayed and asked for clothing to obtain her scent. The dog sniffed the garment and began searching the surrounding area for approximately 2 hours. There's no positive scent indication. The handler also brought the dog to the window Nora was believed to have exited. Again, no confirmed scent trail. The team searched toward a nearby Hindu temple and along a river southeast of the resort. The dog again failed to detect a trail along the rocky riverbanks. Now, to some, that suggested there may not have been a continuous ground track from the house outward. Though in steep, humid jungle terrain, scent can dissipate quickly. During the inquest, testimony also emerged that days before Nora disappeared, an unknown man had briefly approached Nora and her siblings near the resort while their parents were away for a few minutes. Now, the encounter reportedly only lasted seconds. No charges were filed. It became a footnote, unsettling but inconclusive. The resort owner testified as well. Her home faces the Corin's cottage, and she said the night before Nora went missing was peaceful, quiet. Her dog, the one that typically barked at unfamiliar presence, did not make a sound. She confirmed that the window found ajar the next morning had previously been faulty and could be opened from the outside. But she emphasized that in the resort's 11-year history, there had never been a criminal break-in. Authorities maintained there were no suspicious circumstances prior to Nora's disappearance and no signs of intrusion into the chalet. Their position remained that she likely left the accommodation independently and became disoriented in the abandoned palm oil plantation bordering the forest. The Kieran family did not accept that conclusion because they knew Nora. From the earliest days of the search, they argued it would have been entirely out of character for Nora to wander off alone, especially barefoot, in darkness, without clothing, into terrain she physically struggled to navigate even in the daylight. Her mother repeatedly stated that Nora would have been terrified, that she would have frozen rather than run, that she did not have the cognitive capacity to embark on such a journey deliberately. After her death, the family criticized aspects of the police response. They said the initial classification as a missing persons case rather than a potential abduction cost crucial early hours. Meeb described difficulties communicating with officers, saying one officer struggled with English when taking her statement. She said some officials were dismissive or arrogant in tone at a time when she believed urgency and empathy were required. And the autopsy findings only answered one question, and that was what ultimately caused Nora's body to fail. But it did not quiet the emotional and forensic dissonance surrounding the circumstances. How does a fragile, underweight, cognitively delayed teenager travel that distance through steep jungle? Why was there no clear scent trail? Why were items of clothing never recovered? Why did volunteers believe she had not been in that specific location during earlier searches? Officially, her death was consistent with misadventure. Unofficially, unease lingered. In tropical heat, in heavy air, in a landscape both ancient and indifferent, a medical cause of death can exist alongside human doubt. And for her family, that doubt did not evaporate when the autopsy report was signed. It deepened.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Boto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American-made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Even after the autopsy, even after the inquest, even after officials used the word misadventure, the facts refuse to sit quietly. Because when you lay them out in a straight line, they don't feel straight at all. Nora's body was found in an area that searchers believed had been covered before. Volunteers who had combed the terrain earlier said they were certain they passed near that same ravine. One searcher described being shocked, convinced that she had not been there days prior. Sniffer dogs failed to pick up a scent leading from the chalet. The German Shepherd brought to the window through which Nora was believed to have exited did not give a positive indication. The handler testified that across multiple search days, there was no clear tracking path outward from the house. No confirmed scent, no traceable line. Then there was the state of her body. She had been missing for 10 days. She was believed to have died roughly 2 to 4 days before being found. The autopsy concluded upper gastrointestinal bleeding caused by perforated duodenal ulcer consistent with prolonged stress and lack of food. Toxicology found no drugs, no poisons, no noxious jungle substances. But her physical condition raised questions. Aside from scratches to her legs and minor bruising, there were no catastrophic injuries. Nora's father, Sebastian, said that when he identified her body, he distinctly remembered noticing that while her feet were dirty, they were not severely damaged. Not torn or deeply cut the way one might expect from a barefoot trek across rocks and jungle debris for over a mile. Why did her body not reflect extended exposure? Why did it not look like someone who had been scrambling, falling, constantly moving through jagged terrain? Why, after more than 1 week missing, did she appear physically less ravaged than one might expect? And then the most difficult image of all. She was found nude. Her underwear was missing. Despite a large-scale sweep involving hundreds of personnel, no clothing was recovered along the route between the resort and where she was discovered. If she wandered out in her undergarments, what happened to them? The official position maintained there was no evidence of foul play, no ransom demand, no sexual assault. There was no foreign DNA in multiple swab analysis. Police said there were no signs of forced entry, no mud tracks, no footprints in the villa. The terrain surrounding the chalet was muddy and heavily vegetated. The road leading in was dirt. Had someone climbed through a window up a spiral staircase into a bedroom, would there not have been some physical trace? Yet Nora's parents never believed she left voluntarily, because they knew their daughter. This was not a typical 15-year-old who might sneak out impulsively. Nora had the cognitive ability of a 5 or 6-year-old. She was afraid of the dark. She relied heavily on her mother. She struggled physically with uneven ground. She froze under stress. She didn't problem solve independently in emergencies. They insisted it would have been entirely out of character for her to walk into dense jungle at night, barefoot, unclothed, alone. So if it wasn't purely accidental, then what was it? Sebastian voiced a theory that lingers in many tragic cases without evidence, but also without full closure. The possibility of abduction followed by panic. Perhaps someone took her without realizing her profound vulnerabilities. Perhaps they did not anticipate the massive search and global attention. Perhaps they panicked and left her in the forest, assuming she'd be found quickly. Now, there's no forensic proof of that, but absence of evidence can feel different to a grieving parent than proof of evidence. And then, layered into the search itself, there were other cultural undercurrents. During the early days of the operation, a local shaman entered the forest in a trance-like state, performing ritual incantations. He claimed Nora had been lured by a genie, a spirit believed in Islamic tradition to inhabit the earth and influence human beings. He said the spirit was drawn to her because she had special needs and had chosen her as its stepchild. For some, that moment reflected the blending of modern investigation with long-standing spiritual belief in rural Malaysia. For others, it underscored how desperate people were to find explanations when none seemed solid enough. Was it accidental? Was it misadventure? Was it something else? Authorities originally ruled her death a misadventure. But in 2021, that verdict was overturned. A high court judge vacated the misadventure finding and substituted it with an open verdict, stating it was not probable that Nora would have ventured out alone and navigated such challenging terrain. It does not confirm abduction. It simply acknowledges uncertainty, and uncertainty is what remains. There was water near where she was found, but toxicology shows she had not ingested any poisonous plants. The timeline suggests she survived days before dying. Stress can exacerbate ulcers. Starvation can trigger catastrophic internal bleeding. Medically, it's possible. Emotionally, to her family and to many observers, the chain of events still feels fractured. Too many breaks. Too many spaces between facts. In the end, Nora's death sits in that uncomfortable category of modern mystery. A medically explained cause inside a set of circumstances that resist clean explanation. The jungle is vast, but what lingers is not the size of the forest. It's the size of the questions.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
When you look at photos of Ngiri Sembilan, the rolling green of the Titiwangsa foothills, the mist rising over oil palm estates, the quiet chalets tucked into the rainforest, it feels peaceful. And in many ways, it is. Malaysia consistently ranks as one of the safer countries in Southeast Asia for travelers. Violent crime against tourists is relatively rare. The area near Kuala Lumpur is well developed, and eco-resorts like the Dusun cater to families seeking quiet, scenic retreats. But safety in Malaysia, especially in rural and jungle-adjacent areas, depends heavily on context. Because there's city safety, and then there's wilderness safety. Malaysian authorities and tourism boards promote hiking, waterfall treks, jungle walks, and mountain climbs. Gunung Telapak Buruk is a known trekking destination. The former World War II crash site draws adventurous hikers. And almost every official advisory, both from Malaysian authorities and foreign governments, includes a quiet but consistent warning. Do not underestimate the jungle. The rainforest is not forgiving terrain. Trails can disappear under growth. Afternoon rains turn soil slick. Darkness falls quickly near the equator, often within minutes under dense canopy. Cell service is unreliable in mountainous areas, and dehydration can set in rapidly in tropical humidity, even when water sources are nearby. Even experienced hikers get lost in Malaysia's rainforests each year. Local news in the region regularly reports search and rescue operations for trekkers who misjudged time, strayed off marked trails, or were caught out after nightfall. Now layer that reality into a traveler who is a child, and then layer it again into a traveler with cognitive and physical disabilities. Travel safety experts emphasize one consistent principle when traveling with disabled children or vulnerable individuals. Environment matters. Routine matters. Supervision matters. Communication barriers matter. For families traveling with a child who has developmental delays, especially one with limited verbal skills and impaired spatial judgment, risk assessments must go beyond standard precautions. Holoprosencephaly often includes challenges with coordination, balance, endurance, and executive functioning. clinical literature, and medical specialists note that individuals with moderate forms of the condition may struggle with problem-solving under stress, interpreting danger, or navigating unfamiliar spaces independently. In practical terms, that means a trail that looks like easy walking to one traveler may be disorienting to another. A door in the dark may not be easily distinguished from a bathroom doorway. Panic responses may not look like typical panic. When a child is prone to freezing rather than fleeing, vulnerability changes shape. In wilderness-adjacent resorts, even luxury eco-retreats, there are often no perimeter fences designed to contain guests. They are built to immerse people in nature, not to create hardened security bubbles. CCTV coverage is frequently limited to reception areas. Now that's not negligence, it's design philosophy. But design philosophy assumes adult autonomy. After Nora's disappearance, officials maintained that there were no signs of intrusion and no immediate evidence of criminal activity. From a general travel advisory standpoint, Nigeria's Sembalan does not carry high warnings for violent crime against tourists. But wilderness risk doesn't announce itself like street crime does. Travel medical guidance from global health authorities consistently highlights additional planning for families traveling with disabled children. Know the terrain in detail before arrival. Access exit points and access points in accommodations. Carry identification on the child at all times. Have emergency contact plans that do not rely solely on mobile signals. Use physical safeguards where appropriate, door alarms, travel monitors, motion sensors. Establish clear supervision shifts when parents are jet-lagged or fatigued. Fatigue is a risk factor rarely discussed in glossy travel brochures. The Quarans arrived after an overnight flight. Jet lag is exhausting under normal conditions. When caring for a child who requires close supervision, that exhaustion matters. Malaysia's tourism authorities do not categorize the Pantai Hills as dangerous. And statistically, incidents like Nora's are extraordinarily rare. But extraordinary does not mean impossible. In remote eco-resort settings across Southeast Asia, Latin America, Africa, the implicit safety lies in trust. Trust in the quiet, trust in the community, trust that the forest is beautiful but benign at its edges. Traveling with a disabled child shifts that equation. It demands redundancy, layers, a mindset that balances adventure with hyper-awareness. And here's where Nora's story becomes something more than mystery. It becomes cautionary in the gentlest sense. Not to discourage travel, not to paint Malaysia as unsafe, but to acknowledge that environments layered with natural beauty also carry environmental risk. When you travel with a vulnerable person, especially into wilderness-adjacent terrain, you must assume disorientation is possible. You must assume escape routes are accessible. You must assume that even a short window of inattention can change everything. And that's not paranoia, it's preparation. Because the rainforest itself is not malicious. It's simply vast, and vastness requires vigilance. Nora Ann Curran was 15 years old. She was shy, gentle, developmentally vulnerable, deeply loved. She went to sleep in a hillside chalet in Malaysia on a family holiday that was supposed to last 2 weeks. By the end of the first full day, she was gone. 10 days later, she was found in the jungle, barefoot, unclothed, and surrounded by questions that still refused to sit neatly inside any official conclusions. An autopsy gave a medical cause of death. An inquest first ruled misadventure. A high court later vacated that ruling and entered an open verdict, acknowledging that certainty simply wasn't there. And that's where we're left, in uncertainty. Was this a tragic accident shaped by terrain and vulnerability? Was there a missed detail, a moment, a person, a possibility that slipped through in those first critical hours? How does a child like Nora travel that distance? Why were there no clear scent trails? Why were her clothes never found? Sometimes the hardest cases aren't the ones with obvious suspects. They're the ones where the facts exist, but they don't quite align. where medicine explains a body, but not a journey. For Nora's family, this isn't a theory. It's their daughter, their oldest child, the truest, most precious girl. If this episode moved you, I encourage you to do two things. First, educate yourself about travel safety, especially when traveling with children or loved ones with disabilities. Preparation is not paranoia, it's protection. And second, keep Nora's name alive. Share this episode, discuss it, question respectfully. Because open verdicts mean stories aren't finished. It means there's space, and sometimes need, for continued awareness. If you believe in supporting families who face extraordinary vulnerability, consider donating to organizations that advocate for children with developmental disabilities or that support families navigating complex investigations abroad. Nora Ann Kieran deserved a long life filled with holidays, laughter, and safety. Tonight, we remember her. And finally, remember to leave a review and rate this podcast 5 stars if you like the show, or hell, even if you don't. But either way, feel free to let me know what you think. Please follow The Last Trip on Instagram at The Last Trip Crime Pod, and subscribe on Patreon to support the show. You'll get extra research, videos, photos, and updates, and even learn more about my personal travels. That's patreon.com/thelasttrippodcast. I'm Jamie Beebe, bringing you your last trip and signing off until the next one. Thanks for listening.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.